I'm going to be using the expression nonphenols quite a bit. The reason is because 90% of alkyphenols are actually nonphenols. But in this study that I'm reporting on, we are also looking at octaphenol, and we threw in bisphenol A, which is not a member of this group. Nonphenol ethoxylates and nonphenols generally are non-ionic surfactants that's found wide use in industrial settings, in agricultural industry and household applications. Almost all of the household applications in detergents, dishwashing detergents, personal hygiene sauces, and household cleaners are almost discharged into the sewers, which are eventually collected in the wastewater treatment system and processed as such. These compounds in the wastewater treatment system preferentially partition into the solids. These are collected in the sludge, which are eventually processed into biosolids. Now, for those of you who have been here all day, you've heard it repeated again, that land application of sludge and biosolids is a common practice now. The biosolids are applied to land for their fertilizer properties. They provide a source of fertilizer, cheap fertilizer for that matter. They help stabilize the soil by improving soil structure, and it's a source of organic matter. However, this land application practice also serves as a vehicle for transferring organic contaminants to soil. Nonphenol and its ethoxylates have been fingered as a potential endocrine disruptor, and that's a reason for concern. Now, I want to also let you know that land application of biosolids is not just for its altruistic purposes of providing fertilizer. It's a source of a major management option for the wastewater treatment plants. Wastewater treatment plants process sludge. It has to go out. It comes in. It has to go out. And one of the options is land application. In the United States, just a few years ago, 54% of all sludge and biosolids were land applied. And that number has gone up. Somebody mentioned this morning it has gone up from around four dry metric tons to 7 metric tons a year. So this is on the increase. In the state of New Jersey, the latest data was from 2008. And 63% of all the sludge produced in state were beneficially reused. Now, produced in the state were beneficially reused, some in-state, some out of state. At the peak of this exercise, of this land application exercise, in the 1990s, a lot of hectares of land were touched or were really affected by this land application program. Now, 1990s was the peak. Right now, we're sending 22% out of state. And you have to understand that this is important for New Jersey. We're a small state, and we really have high population density. So finding agricultural lands to apply biosolids is decreasing and becomes a problem. So we find sympathy from other states, so we send them there. Now, it's the Garden State. Now, nonphenols have been reported in the literature to be generally biodegradable in aerobic environments. However, the same publications, the same researchers also show, also report there is a fraction that's unrecoverable. Most of these studies that have been made known were all done in the laboratory on up to 90 days from what you've listened to here today, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. They are short-term studies. Not many of them have long-term data to present. And most of these studies were done using aerobically digested or anaerobically digested biosolids. In one study that we are not reporting here today, we actually examined 14 wastewater treatment plants across the United States, from east, west, north, south. We look at the concentrations of all these compounds that we're talking about here today. We look at them in the sludge, and we look at them in the biosolids. Well, sludge and biosolids is a matter of regulatory definition. Sludge is what it is when it's separated from wastewater treatment plants. Biosolids is what it is when it's stabilized to meet certain regulatory standards, in which case, at this point, it can be used as land application material. So we look at this, we establish the threshold concentrations of these compounds, these nonylphenols, octophenol and bisphenol A, in sludge and in biosolids. We're not presenting that data here today, but this is to go along with, to kind of fill the void that we see right now in the literature, that most work has been done with aerobically digested and anaerobically digested sludge, and there is little or no data on alkaline stabilized biosolids. So we set out to examine the long-term persistence of nonylphenols in sites that have been amended with alkaline stabilized biosolids, and also to assess the effects of soil properties and site management on the persistence of these compounds. Our sample locations are across the state of New Jersey. We have 18 sites. We selected these sites to reflect the soil properties spread across these physiographic regions. We sampled 0 to 17 centimeters, and topsoil and subsoil 17 to 50 centimeters. The samples were air dry, passed through 2 millimeter sieve, and we proceeded to do soil characterization on them. We tested for pH, electrical conductivity, particle size analysis, and organic matter. For our target compounds, 5 gram samples were extracted using accelerated solvent extraction with 50-50 acetone methylene chloride mixture. 4 nonylphenol, straight chain nonylphenol, nonylphenol ethoxylate, and nonylphenol diethoxylate were used as surrogates. These are compounds that are not expected to find in the environment. So I'll talk about that later, in later slide. The extracts were cleaned up on fluorosil and concentrated under nitrogen stream. Deuterated acenaphthene and phenanthrene were used as internal standards prior to final volume. And separation and quantification was done by capillary gas chromatography with mass spectrometry. This table shows us the soil characterization. This has been grouped in blocks just to reflect the soil management. The light yellow color, those are the sites that are inactive. The middle block, those are the cultivated sites. And the bottom block, that's the what we refer to as the reclamation sites. I guess in some other lingo, that would be either contact or non-contact sites. But now, the application rates range from 10 to 148 megagrams per hectare. The 148 is unusual. That's not an agronomic rate. But for the purpose of a different purpose, we did that. And the soil texture range from the coarse loamy sand to silty clay loam to fine material. And the pH. The pH in the fallow sites are somewhere around 7 plus, no, just a little above 7, a little below 7. But the cultivated sites have a something of more normal pH range. The reclaimed sites are usually around 7. Now, I'm not presenting the table showing the concentrations of the of target compounds. I'll show you that in a graphic form. But we found no obvious correlation between the concentrations of the compounds that we're looking for or we're looking at and either the salt separates or salt organic matter. We actually expected that there's going to be some correlation between salt organic matter and the concentrations that we found, but there is no correlation in, at all. Now, this is in the topsoil. A similar pattern was found in the subsoil. And interesting, too, that the pH, the differences in pH is almost is minimal between the topsoil and subsoil. And we're talking all the way to 50 centimeters. Typical separation of the compounds look like this. The blue ones are the internal standards, the red are the surrogates, and the ones in black are the target compounds that we're interested in. Now, the nonylphenols, this is the nonylphenol parent compound, and monoethoxylate, and the diethoxylate. These compounds in environmental samples are usually a mixture of isomers. And that's what allowed us to be able to use straight chain compounds as surrogates. Now, instead of presenting you with a table, just showing numbers, and decided to put this in graphic form, what we found is most of the, all the compounds that we're looking at are all detected at nanogram level, nanogram per gram level. Now, interesting that in the normal sequence of events, the diethoxylates are biodegraded into monoethoxylate, and that is further biodegraded into NP. So in most cases, what people found is the NP to bioaccumulate much more than the monoethoxylate or the diethoxylate, and in some cases, there are higher substituted ones. There's triethoxylate. The N on the substrate and instead of one here, that number could go as high as 100. Okay. So we found accumulation of nonylphenols at a higher level than the monoethoxylates and diethoxylates, and also much higher than octophenol and bisphenol A. Actually, octophenol and bisphenol A, accumulation is not more than 4 nanograms per gram. In the subsoil, a similar pattern, we observe a similar pattern. And based on this, we concluded that nonylphenol ethoxylates are persistent in soil. This was discovered at nanogram level to a depth of about 50 centimeters in soil. Now, this is surprising because these sites have been amended almost 9 to 10 years previously. So given time, we expected that at this point, these compounds should have been completely metabolized and there should be nothing there. So it's quite a surprise that we could detect these compounds at nanogram level. The hydrophobic nonylphenol, NP, is found in greater amounts than the substituted forms, the ethoxylates. And we propose that these compounds have become native by incorporation into soil organic matter that render them unavailable to biodegradation. And it is also likely that these compounds have already formed mega molecules with other compounds that render them unavailable for biodegradation. Thank you. Yes.
In your chromatogram where you showed how you detected your compounds at a different retention time, I noticed that you had a lot of compounds where your nonylphenols were present. How confident were you in that separation? Where you had a lot of BNP?
Over here?
Yeah.
Okay.
How many compounds were supposed to be present in that 1 minute retention?
Okay. This compound, as I said, these compounds are a mixture of isomers. So when you take a when you analyze this compound on its own, you can tell how many isomers are in it. So when you have a mixture of compounds, as I have on this spectrum here, we know already by comparing these to known standards. We know how many are supposed to be there. Now, over time, it is possible for these things to degrade and for the number of isomers to change. But if you we compare this to known standards right at the beginning, so we know what it should look like. So in a mixture of other compounds, it is easy to know. And at the same time, we're using a GC mass spec, so we're able to actually look at the fragments to confirm this.
So with your, for your standards, did you use a mixture of the isomers, or did you have individual isomers?
Okay. Yeah, for the standards, we did both. We have straight compounds and a mixture of isomers. Yes. Thank you.